each meaningless thought. The shell appears strong, but the inside is rot. It's time to be stirred. The time is now. The winds have changed. Read the signs. No time to hide. The winds have changed.
Millennia ago, from the little cave on the tiny island of Patmos in the Aegean Sea, the heavens opened. Since then, the world has been fascinated by the cosmic upheaval brewing on the horizon of history. The upheaval is now upon us. It is within us. To some degree, it always has been. But there has been a sudden and violent shift in the affairs of the world. The winds have changed. Heaven will not be silent. Let's now join Father Anthony Bush, pastor of St. Stanislaus Kostka, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy in Chicago, and author of A Mother's Plea, For the Winds Have Changed. Together we can pave the way for a hopeful response to the signs of our times.
Hey everybody, and welcome. Just going to swallow. I swallowed something. I don't know what, but
it's the air.
I'm drinking this real lemonade, you know. Mm-hmm. Not lemonade, it's lemon.
Homemade.
No sugar. So maybe that. Anyway, welcome. I'm Father Anthony. I'm your brother. I share with you the distress, the kingdom, the endurance we have in Christ Jesus. Don't want to talk about distress, but, you know.
There's a lot of it around.
Well, you know, I got to ask you about this, Tony. So this is another tale cool. of two Tonys on Tuesday. Maybe we're just not the right people for this, you know. I don't know. But anyway, we keep praying. We're praying for Christina. She's doing fine. She's doing very well. So, but in any case, it's been a crazy day. You know, and every day is a crazy day for
it's
me.
A mess,
I don't know.
Every
it's
day.
Just the way it is. So, but I want to share with you. The tale of two Tonys. And I want to go back to what I. When I say the tale of two Tonys, because I've got the tale of two letters, you know, okay,
the tale of two letters that
contrast. One is a radical contrast to the other, directed at me, which is good. You know, I need this in my life because I need to be humbled.
So I'm gonna be the second Tony to help you analyze.
Yes, this is exactly what we're gonna do today.
Okay.
You know, so you come in and as I'm trying to play pastor and. Secretary and all that, and you know you try to get into a train of thought, and then there's Armin coming to my office, and then there's somebody else coming to my office, and then there's some the doorbell rings, and you know, and I'm in the chapel. I mean, not when Armin came, and I'm just joking, Armin.
Right.
You know, so not really joking. So. But we had a nice little talk. He was very 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 short, and he says, "I can see you're." You're anxious, and you gotta get ready for the show, and it better be a good one. That is, you know, put the pressure on me there. So,
right.
But anyway, so, so I was reflecting on the peace that should come from God. You know, Jesus is the Prince of Peace, and he said, "Don't worry about tomorrow. Today has troubles enough of its own. I'm with you today, and I'm going to get you through this day." So I trust, you know, you're going to get me through this day. And he does. But all the while, I do as I do every day. I muddle, I fumble, I stumble, I can't get the clarity to my thoughts. So even as I'm praying, because I said, I'm asking the Lord, give me the space to focus, which is hard for me to do, to focus, so that I have... some cohesive pulled together in a tight way message that I can convey over the radio. So I'm always saying, yeah, I'd like to improve my presentation, however it is that I present, knowing full well that I probably shouldn't be here, but and I haven't really had great preparation. So, which reminds me, Nick and I did a recording last week for the answering service. We have an answering service, so I was being pressured last week. Nick was being pressured. You know, you got to get this this thing recorded so they can get it on the answering service, because now when people call 27, they get to a real person. You're going to not talk to a machine, but you're going to talk to a real person, which is a good thing. 24/7, just like our doors open 24/7 now.
See, that threw me too, because I thought when you were telling me this that it was just going to be an answering, which is nice to have a recording, and then you leave whatever. But you actually listen to somebody that says, "Hey,
somebody's going to talk to you." You know,
yeah, body.
So strange today, you know. And when
it was strange.
And I keep referring to it as an answering service, but mm-hmm. it's an answering machine, but it's an answering service. It is actually somebody who answers a phone. But before you get to that person, of course, you know, you hear. You'll hear my voice. Not yet, Nick. Not yet. I'm telling you, because we recorded on Friday, so we were being pressured to record this message.
Right.
Got to get it on. Got to get it on. Got to get it on. So I was stressed out because I'm mm-hmm. doing triple work the last week, and that's why I finally came on the radio on Friday. Right. You didn't show up because
right.
you were. I left you a message, but you were up late because we didn't think we were going to be on the radio. So, anyways, I kind of soloed it, but Nick came in at one point. Mm-hmm. So anyway, so I'm being pressured, and I says I'm not going to do it until Monday because I just had too much going on, and even to do a recording is not the easiest thing for me because I want it to be perfect, and I know I'm far from perfect, and so I once tried to do this on the answering machine. And I think I went through 25 different recordings before.
Couldn't we get one of those elves that do such a good job?
Well, they want my voice.
They want your voice.
They
said
this is important.
I think that would make it easier.
So whatever, it would make it much much easier. So here we did the recording,
mm-hmm.
and I was answering the phones all day yesterday and returning the calls. You know, because I get the answering service, they say and they're very very kind and very polite and. They say God bless you and all that, and
that's
a very
nice.
Sweet voice. And so people, I try to return all those calls. Mm-hmm. Almost there's and there's a lot. And so I asked, one of the calls, did you hear my voice? She was talking about how nice it was,
mm-hmm.
That the phone is answered and you got a nice person on the other end. It's taking the information with calm, without being flustered or mm-hmm. or under pressure, and. So I said, "Well, do we get the message in?" And she said, "No, it wasn't your voice." So I said, "Well, what all this pressure we were under last week?" So I sent an email. The voice isn't on. It's not on the. So anyway, and now I think we're going to have to record it mm-hmm. again. So anyway, how did I get from there to here? I don't know, but I suppose the point is that. You set out to do, you want to do things in an orderly way. You want to have some control.
It never works that way.
It never works that way. So even the radio, how can I improve? How can I focus? I said, mm-hmm. Ask the Lord in prayer, right now, give me this hour to not be disturbed, just to focus. Give me clarity of thought. Help me to do a better job, in other words, and help me not to get in the way, because mm-hmm. I'll go into this in a moment. So, didn't happen. It didn't happen. The phone, the doorbell was ringing and and all that. So anyway, so it is. I said, okay, you just got to put in God's hands and I got to be true to who I am before the Lord. But anyway, my day started out in a strange way. So I'll tell you first. I received a letter maybe... a week ago, a little over a week ago, and it was really a nice letter. I needed it that day, because this was a person. She said she's wanted to write for a long time, but it's been busy and all that. But she told me about her coming back into the faith, and she said, "Yeah, I went to Catholic school. I believed in my heart and with all my heart in the Catholic faith, but." Without the sacraments, I was never really Catholic. She hadn't received the sacraments. And without getting into a long story, a story of it all, she said, when I decided it was time to remedy my sacrament situation, complete the RCIA, and fully realize my faith, she said, I was very, very nervous. And this is important to hear because we don't realize how hard it is sometimes for people to take that step. She said, I would have done it much sooner, but I couldn't get over this nervousness. I was really nervous. I was scared to dial the number. Just nervous.
Wow.
I was wondering, what if they won't have me? Isn't that something? What if they won't have me? They're going to judge me. I was never baptized. Who has never been baptized? She's an adult. And so on and so on, you know. Very interesting. Because then it made me think, well, how many people out there would like to come back or even come to the church, but there is a nervousness. They are afraid, you know, that they're not going to be accepted, they're not going to be received, or they're going to be judged because they weren't, you know, they didn't receive the sacraments when they were children, whatever it might be. So this just makes me aware of the sensitivity we need to have as we're dealing with people who, through no fault of their own, have missed out on a lot. So anyway, so she said she finally got up the nerve to call. She said, obviously, she wasn't chastised or exiled. She said, I was welcomed. But although welcomed, it was very nice, especially to the nervous wreck that I was. It was also very different from belonging. So she's on one hand she felt welcomed. The other question was the question of belonging. So she describes one night she came here. She was being prepared in another parish, but was going to make her sacrament here. So that's another story. But she wasn't making the preparation in another parish. She was, in a sense, because a catechist was from here preparing her in another parish. Oh, but she was going to. But she brought her here that she would be confirmed in our parish. So now she said, okay, I felt welcomed when I called and began the process, but I didn't feel. There was still the question of do I belong? And so, let me just see here. She said, so the catechist invited her here, you know, to meet me after one of the masses. She says, that very night, you said two things that will never leave me. Number one, I told you that I was in the RCI program and how excited I was to finally fully practice my faith, since that was all very new to me. And after I established that fact, and the fact that I didn't attend a specific parish, you in turn invited me to make St. Stan's my home, church. Not just come whenever, hope to see you around, but to make the commitment to this place. So I asked her specifically, you know, make this your home, be committed here. The second thing, in passing, I said something along the lines of, well, it will be great to finally be a real Catholic. And very quickly, you corrected me and said, oh, you've always been a real Catholic. And just like that, she said, I felt like I belonged, that I had really, really come home, that I had always been home in a sense. You know,
I've heard you do that many times.
I do. Well, I do that. Yeah. So, and she talks about so beautifully about how many times, by the grace of God, I'm not going to go on, but the one of the things she describes here is that she just didn't, something about me, she said, I felt that I did not really belong anywhere. I felt like the perpetual square peg. It bugged me a lot. Nevertheless, there didn't seem to be any place where it wasn't true that I didn't feel that I belonged. From high school to my various groups of friends that came and went, to my own family. And she said, yes, I was welcome, but belonging is something very different. You know, I bring this up because I think this is, it made me aware of, because this is a wonderful person. Mm-hmm. And I would not known that she was going through these kinds of feelings. But how many people out there, how many people listening to the radio perhaps don't feel that they belong? Or maybe, you know, there's this apprehension or this fear or this anxiety if they've been away from the church or if they've not, they haven't received the sacraments, to make that step into this place, this institution, this sacred institution, this mystical body of Christ, but feeling perhaps unworthy or not deserving, or that they're going to be judged in a rash, critical kind of a way. We have to be sensitive to that reality in the lives of many people, because we do live in a strange time, in the sense that the kind of stability that we knew, or that was rather prevalent many, many years ago. Really, I say many years ago, because it's been already for decades that things have become quite unsettling. But, in this sense, that we can truly be with and walk with or accompany people, as the Holy Father has said repeatedly, that we take them where they're at and we bring them, into the fold. And that is going to be a challenge in and of itself, because it means that, we don't espouse here cafeteria type Catholicism where you choose this or choose that. But how do we assist others to come to embrace and appreciate and give their assent to the full counsel of God? I keep going back to that, the full counsel of God, the words of St. Paul, trying to find that balance, So that's a good letter that I received, that I felt really encouraged, and I felt like I was doing, that I'm doing the right thing. Because I've had many people say that, because as you said, I say it all the time. When I see people, I say, if they're... this is your home. The doors are open to you. As they say in Spanish, mi casa es tu casa, no? My house is your house. This is your house. This is God's house. We open our doors. Our doors are open because we want people to come. And even if they're not able yet to have that encounter with Christ in the sacraments, at least the doors are open so that they can come into sacred space, place themselves before the Holy Eucharist, even if they don't understand, what this means to us, what this is for us, the power that emanates. And we know from experience that many people have done just that, and the sacrament, Jesus mediating himself through that sacrament to the individual can be life-changing. And truly, truly healing. Sometimes in an instantaneous way. Other times in a rather gradual way. And then eventually, hopefully they'll find their way to an openness to be prepared for or receive the sacraments of the church. Anyway, so that was a positive. That was a very positive. Now we're going to take a break. We'll take a break, and then we'll come back, and I will share with you a little bit of the challenge that dampened my spirits and drew me to my knees, to be honest. And then we can maybe discuss. And then I would like maybe to get into, the five hard truths that will set us free. We'll see where we go. But anyway, let's take a break. We'll be right back. I'm Father Anthony. You're listening to Listener Supported Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
St. Stanislaus Kostka Church is the Oratory of the Divine Mercy in Chicago. Founded by Polish immigrants in the late 1800s, this historic church is more commonly known as St. Stan's. One church, many cultures, in that masses are held in English, Spanish, and Polish. The church is two blocks north of Division on Noble, just off the Kennedy. St. Stan's has been so prominent in the history of the church in Chicago that the Kennedy Expressway was even built around it. St. Stan's is easy to get to. It is the sanctuary for quiet prayer before the celebrated iconic monstrance. For Mass and confession times and special events, please visit our new website at ststanschurch.org. That's ststanschurch.org. And while you're on the homepage, feel free to click on the donations tab to help in the continuing restoration of St. Stan's.
The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ and on the World Wide Web at windsofchangeshow.com.
You've looked for the right school for your child, but what school? You've worked hard to instill right reason and the values that God has established. And yet, you might be concerned not only with your child's school's quality of education, but by what they may be teaching, maybe undermining what you have worked so hard to instill. Perhaps St. Stanislaus Kostka School could be the positive answer to your questions. Academic excellence and Christ-centered values are the hallmarks of St. Stanislaus Kostka School. To find out what may be the best opportunity for your child, visit ststanschicago.org. That's ststanschicago.org. See the videos, see the students, and see what may be the best decision you can make for your child. Contact the school online or pick up the phone and call St. Stanislaus Kostka School to arrange for a visit at 773-278-4560. That's 773-278-4560.
Welcome back, everybody. Welcome back. It's good to be back. So now the bad news. The last segment was the good news.
Let me prepare myself.
Prepare yourself.
Okay. Good.
So and I appreciate this. This letter I just shared came to me at a day when I needed it. I really needed it because sometimes you just don't know. You just feel like somebody said the other day, how many people are just kind of thrown in the towel? Because they just feel so, who's got our back? It's just the world we live in, But anyway, so this, I needed that day because, And especially from this person, because this is a highly educated person, not to put down those who are not educated. Our life is an education, right? But this is a professional person who, people who are sometimes highly educated tend to be more critical because, too much education can in a sense, if we're not humble before God and before God's truth, because there is the wisdom of the poor, the wisdom of the uneducated. I think of my grandmother. I think of so many people I've met. In fact, I would say, quite honestly, the wisest people, I've learned more from those who don't have education because they, for whatever reason, their wisdom comes from their life experience, and it's untainted by this guru or that guru or this idiot, whatever it might be. Anyway, if that makes any sense. So but I value this because I realize how important it is, and I want to say this to you, to everybody, not to you, Tony, but to everybody, you in the plural, everybody listening, how important it is, especially today when we are under a microscope, or we are. As Catholics, as Christians, we are not in. We're no longer in Kansas, so to speak. We're really faced with enormous challenge. Fixation on any kind of deviations, any kind of scandals, the division that's in the nation and in the political realm is also very. It's the same kind of division within the church. It creates a lot of confusion for a lot of people, who are discerning and people who are, really looking to be fed, looking to have their faith strengthened, trying to find ways to live in this crazy world. If you think it's crazy, I certainly do. I truly, truly believe it is crazier than it was 5 years ago, crazier than it was 20 years ago, crazier than it was 40 years ago.
It's getting worse.
It's getting worse. It seems to me, okay, so we're the, you and I, Tony, the tell it to Tony, the to pessimistic people. Woe is me, woe is me. Woe are we, right?
Yeah.
But not really. But so I got a letter. So this idea that, that we're not bad people. We want you home. We want you to be part of this body of Christ, the doors are open to you, and let us walk with you and bring you to assent, to give your consent, your assent to your surrender, the offering of your life to God in this rich, rich tradition, a living tradition. You know, we the small flock that is in the journey, in the battle, on the way, you know, in the spiritual battle, we who are trying to weather the storms and fight the good fight, and we who are sinners, you know, I mean, truthfully, we have to admit that we are sinners. We miss the mark. But we're not here to insist that society has done a good job by changing, rewriting the laws of God. They've just completely dismissed the laws of God. And God has been, you know, relegated to his heaven beyond the beyond, you know. We're not going to. So society is doing, has been very effective in dismantling, you know, the moral fiber of our society, which is a safeguard to the well-being of the family and the community, the nation, the future, right? Because it all, you know, here at least, has been based on Judeo-Christian principles and values. So we come to want to give our consent, give our assent, surrender to a higher authority, a supreme authority, God's perfection, God's incomprehensible love and incomprehensible mercy. This is what we want to do. We're not here to recreate God in our image and likeness or redefine the laws of God to accommodate our proclivities or idiosyncrasies or sinful inclinations. And yes, we do. We use the word sin. Because it's there. It's in the Bible. I mean, you know. So it's there from the beginning to the end. We are sinful people, which means that we really sin is what? But that we participate in disorder within us and around us. You know. So anyway, so I got a letter this morning. I'll tell you about this. And I take it very serious. I have to look at myself and my friends, you know, I say we're in this together. Thank God Armin is here because he just kind of reminded me that, you know, this is what I'm supposed to do. Thank you, Armin. I'm not here just going to read the catechism or read the Aquinas' Summa or, you know, what I'm here to talk about. As I've said many times before, we're trying to work this out. Mm-hmm. We're trying to work it out. I'm a priest. Yes, I'm a priest. You know, I'm not a professor, but I do teach. I do teach, but more than anything, I'm trying to work out, and I do preach and teach. You know, but I'm trying to work it out for myself and for you and for others as well. Trying to read the sign. I'll go back to what Pope Benedict said. I'm glad this comes to my mind, and I've shared this with you before. But I had a private audience with Pope Benedict some years ago, private. I mean, it was really private. It's not like just me and the Pope or the Pope and I. What do you say, the Pope and I?
Pope and I.
Too bad Geraldine's not here to correct my English. but I was with some other priests. It was a small group of priests, and we were in the Vatican, deep into the Vatican. It was incredible. I've never been that deep into the Vatican. It's a massive place, immaculate, and really rather simple. It's not ornate in the sense that, you know, it's just very simple but very clean, and it's just a work of art. It's a work of art. So we were in one of this hall, a small hall, deep into the Vatican. When I say deep into the Vatican, I mean we had to walk down long corridors and upstairs and down other corridors, and it was really impressive. So the Pope said, you know, as he spoke to us, we were all priests. And he says, do not, this is Pope Benedict, he says, do not neglect your prophetic office. He said, read the signs of the times. Because we all share in the priestly office of Jesus, the kingly office of Jesus, and the prophetic office of Jesus. Not just the priests who are ordained, but all the baptized share in the priestly, the kingly, and the prophetic office of Jesus Christ, the priestly, and insofar as we offer to God our lives and those of others. The kingly is in the sense that we have to participate in the governance of God. We, as priests, of course, we govern the govern the parish in a sense under the authority of the archbishop and the pope. I have a lot of superiors. A lot of, I say superiors because they are a lot of bosses. Mm-hmm. You know, some can. Well, I wouldn't say anybody. Well, I would say the pope is a little bit bossy. You know, in all due respect. But even the people of God are baptized, you know, they have to govern their families, right? We have to govern our lives. We have to live in a way that we have a responsibility of governance, to lead, in other words. And then also the prophetic, to read the signs of the times. And, you know, this is unacceptable. This is contrary to the will of God. This is contrary to the gospel message of Jesus Christ. This goes contrary to the commandments of God. And so in that sense, we read the signs of the times. No, we cannot. We're not going to compromise. We're not going to cave because this is contrary to who we are. This is contrary to what has been revealed to us. This will have consequences for my personal life, for the life of my family, my friends, the broader society, the world, the church. And so, in that sense, prophetic. So prophetic isn't about, you know, I'm going to prophesy that the Messiah, Jesus, is going to come in 2 years. That's not what we mean by prophetic. Prophetic is, you know, to discern the signs of the times and not to succumb to the seductions or the illusion or the allurement of the enemy, the devil. Jesus said is the father of lies. He's the prince of darkness. He is the prince of this world. And some of us still believe that. Some of us do. The church officially believes that. And so, you know, the devil, the powers and the principalities can be very alluring, very seductive. But the demonic, the devil, have I said this before, you know, at a quinceañera? In fact, I did this past week at a quinceañera. But I always ask the young girl and her chambelán. I should say the young woman, because at that point she's no longer a girl. She's now moving into womanhood. She's 15. The quinceañera, that's what it means, 15 years. And she has her chambelán and the damas, the court, mm-hmm. other young people. So it's always, I like those because it gives me a chance to talk to them, because a lot of times they, you know, they work at church for their baptism, they were at church for their Holy Communion, they may have been confirmed, and now they're here for their quinceañera. So I like to do that, you know, because it's an opportunity, it's a way to plant seeds, it's a way to, you know, challenge and to speak about the precious, precious gift of life, but life is very fragile. And so there's a lot of things that I like. But I do always, often I bring up, you know, hey, listen, if, because I use the gospel of those disciples who walk away when Jesus is talking about the Eucharist, about the, you know, eat my flesh and drink my body. I mean, eat my flesh and drink my blood. And you will have life in you. Well, how can you give us your body to eat, or your body to eat, your flesh to drink? And he just repeats, you know, various times, about 6 times in John's gospel. He doesn't answer the question, because it is the sublime mystery of the faith, that Jesus comes to us in a very distinct way, in a very unique way, as food for the journey, that we not collapse, that we not only stay on this path, but that we are priestly, prophetic, and kingly people. So the disciples, his disciples, they said, this is intolerable teaching, this is too much, and they walk away. And Jesus let him go. And he looked at the 12, and he says, do you wish to go as well? He knew one would betray him, even so. And Peter said, where do we go? We believe you have the words of life everlasting. We stay with you. Maybe we don't understand this. This is beyond anything we can comprehend, but we trust you. We believe you. We defer to you. You're the Messiah. He doesn't say it there, but he'll say it elsewhere. Even so, he's gonna. Even so, at the end, they don't, they, like us. They mm-hmm. don't. They get confused. They Jesus is very frustrated at the end of his life because he says, you've been with me now how many years, and you still don't understand. And I believe the Lord, this morning I was wondering if the Lord was saying that to me too. You know, I went to the chapel, he says, you know, Tony, you know, you, how many years have you been with me? How long have you been with me? And you still don't get it, you know? Now listen to this guy that's writing you this letter. And again, you know, I'm my worst enemy, so I just assume that that's how the Lord is receiving me, you know? Okay, see, I told you. You've got it now in your face. This is your problem, and this is why you don't have any people in the church, or you got very few people in the church, because you're the culprit. You're the problem here. You gotta change your ways. And maybe he's saying that. But anyway, I deviate a little bit. So the point being that we were in this together, and we're trying to work this out and trying to read the signs of the times and trying to be prophetic. At least I take that. I loved when Pope Benedict said, exercise your prophetic office, because I always feel that I do. I mean, I always feel that I have. That's been part of my struggle. And that's why I often speak of suffering and struggle, and I love the reading on Sunday about the spirit that groans within us. Even we who have the spirit, yet we groan inwardly as we await the liberation of our bodies, because we're bound to the limitations of this world. Jesus himself, fully divine, fully human, but in life, in this life, when he took on our flesh, his humanity imposed limitations on his divinity. So we'll see Jesus groaning in prayer as he longs for this return to the Father, not only his return to the Father, but that he would bring others with him. Okay, so it's taken me a long time to get to this letter, so we're going to take a break. It's well beyond time to take a break. We'll take a break, come back, and then I'll talk to you about this letter, which was very challenging, and I said dampened my spirit in a very real way. So, okay, don't go away. We'll be right back. I'm Father Anthony. You're listening to Listener Supported Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
Every first Friday, Jeff Hammond sits in to host Winds of Change to talk about the First Friday devotion. Jeff is the section representative of the Equestrian Order of the Holy Sepulchre for the Archdiocese of Chicago. Jeff will share the history, tradition, and prayers of the First Friday devotion. First Fridays at noon on Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ and on the World Wide Web at windsofchangeshow.com.
The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ and on the World Wide Web at windsofchangeshow.com.
Do I praise, show appreciation for, and respect my spouse? Listen, we can never perfect our husband or wife by criticizing and harping on his or her faults. It's best to look in the mirror on a daily basis and work on the perpetual plank in one's own eye. See Matthew 7:4. For me, I usually find a redwood tree there. Betterment of one's spouse will chiefly be accomplished through prayer, sacrifice, and one's personal example. That's not to say that one should absolutely never charitably correct his or her spouse. There are times when this may be needed, but this approach should be very rare, and it ought to be understood that criticism is not the primary and most effective way of bettering one's spouse and marriage. Let's be patient and love, honor, and build up our spouse. I'm Jim Littleton, formingfaithfulfamilies.com.
Welcome back, everybody, and thanks for being with us. Now the letter, okay? I shared with you the nice letter that was uplifting and that kind of reconfirmed my style, what I do. I shouldn't say my style. I hope it's God's style.
Working through you.
The Lord working through me. But I do know that I get in the way, and I do pray every day, Lord, don't let me get in the way. Don't let me be an impediment. Because I know I've got a strong, I don't know if you perceive this, Tony, but I know in myself I have a strong personality. Now, maybe it doesn't come true because it's with great effort that I keep it back. So even when this letter came through with some very hard challenges written in a hard way, I thought, you know, I'm not super, super sensitive. I think people today are super sensitive, and I'm not saying this guy is. I really appreciate, and I wrote him back, and I said, you know, I want to thank you for taking the time to write and to critique and reprimand me, because it may be a valid challenge. And I was just going to prayer. I was on my way to adoration, and I went to my office for the first time this morning to see, okay, what's going on? Any big issues in the world? Is everything okay with the world? And I look at also what messages, are there any emergencies or whatever it might be? And I got this very long letter. And the gentleman said that, basically, I'll summarize, I didn't even bring it down here, but basically that I am absolutely too political in my preaching, and also that I talk too much about myself and about my health. And I don't know, Tony, I don't talk a lot about my health, do I?
No.
I mean,
you do.
Do I do?
You do. But Father, let me, to be, well, since you've asked, you do it, okay? And maybe for somebody like me, because I'm walking that walk through with you, not only do you talk about yourself, but it's never, hey, this is about Father Tony. There's always a lesson, and this bothers me, and thank you for giving me the opportunity to say this, because, again, it's not talking about yourself. There's something learned from this, and you got to understand this, and I know you understand this, and I don't have to tell you, but like you sometimes, Father, I'm going to. You know what? There are a lot of people going through this with you. And just hearing this and hearing this struggle at many times, I mean, just what you're going through helped me go through with my mom. I mean, this has to be, for what I believe, people that are in church every Sunday are there for that reason. Okay, not so much for you, but for what you say at that podium. So I'm sorry, I disagree with that. I don't think you do it excessively, but there always is a reason when you do.
Well, and let me respond to that, because I think, first of all, when somebody says you talk too much about yourself or about your health, you know, that bothers me, because I don't want to, and honestly, even when we come to the radio, we share our the stuff going on in our lives, so that, you know, it's my way of saying it. Just as you, first of all, let me just say this, and because of the other criticism is that I talk too much about suffering and all that. But, you know, and I'm not.
Do we not suffer?
I deal with this not myself, but I listen every day to people's sufferings. People are suffering. As I always say, if it's not in the mind, it's in the body, it's in the soul, or it's in the spirit. So I think often, even when I was in the hospital a year ago, and I would continue to write letters, because it was a really traumatic time for me, and I tried to take it, I hope, I don't hope, I know I did this. I try to take it beyond myself to say, okay, how do we look at our suffering in the bigger scheme of things? You know, how, because it's all part of, in fact, I heard something this morning on the radio about, and I think this is true, that our society doesn't know how to deal with suffering.
It doesn't.
We try to deny it.
Or just make sure it's like, I hate to say fairyland, but it doesn't exist. Soften it down.
Which precisely is why, going back to the previous letter, this person expressed in her letter, you know, the fact that she felt often in her life unwelcomed and like she didn't belong in her family, among her coworkers. How many people feel that? And I listen to this all the time. I'm in the confessional a lot. And even aside from the confessional, just about anybody and everybody that comes to me is coming to me with problems. And now I'm on the phone this week because Christina's not here. And we got this answering. So I get all the calls that come in. I'm trying to return all of those. You can't just return a call. Christina would have a good way of filtering those calls because she knows my schedule. But I'm trying to cover all this. And what could be a 5-minute conversation turns into a 30-minute or 40-minute conversation, because when they find out, oh, it's you, you know, Father Anthony, well, this is this is, you know, this is what's going on. And you know, it's compassion is to suffer with. The church suffers with people. Jesus suffered with us. Jesus, his whole crucifixion, his death, his resurrection, was the manifestation of the extreme love God has for us, that he wouldn't spare himself anything of what we suffer. And so my consolation, and this is what I try to convey to the people, communicate to the people, is that, you know, this is what I'm learning from my experience. Now, there's many experiences in the course of my life. As I've said, maybe I repeat it too much. Maybe people really do. I don't know, but I've said it before, and I've said, you know, I don't know joy, exuberant joy. I don't know that I know what that is. I experience joy. I have joy even today in the midst of all this. But it's a joy because you know that God is with you, and there's meaning and purpose. I have meaning and purpose in my life that I know that there's that all things will end well for those who love God, and my hope is that I can bring, we can bring people to know the love that God has for them, that they can, in gratitude, reciprocate and find, yes, that they do, you know, that our belonging is a belonging to not something, but someone, and that someone is God, the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, who brings us into this mystical body. So that really bothers me, and I say I do have to look at that. You know, is it to, talk a lot. In fact, less and less, because I'm beyond that traumatic time. Exactly. But I try to bring it beyond myself. Now, the other thing is about the political. This is maybe because the other thing that really was very hurtful, I thought, hurtful for me, but also because it may have hurt others, and that is, he brought some people to the church, and he said that they were deeply offended by the way that I preached, and they're trying to come back into the church. And so they said they would never come back here again. And he said quite honestly that, you know, you wonder why there are so few people in the church. He said, maybe you better take a good look at yourself. He says, now, when you're not here, a lot of people come. When you are here, people tend to stay away. But for me, what it does is it forces me to, because I have to say, I said it already, I'll say it again, I know I have a certain passion about certain things, and I have to, you know, as we all do, but I happen to be in a position, in a situation where I have to communicate. I'm a mouthpiece. I'm preaching. I'm proclaiming. I'm teaching. And I, from the time I went to the seminary, I think my whole life, but I know when I went to the seminary, and my whole priesthood has been wanting to hear somebody challenge me. I want to be challenged. And politically speaking, I mean, I just don't think that I bring a certain element of the politics into the homily or the exhortation on the Word of God, but I try to bring it within the context of Scripture, and it's not the, with regard, for instance, to the divisiveness or divisiveness in the nation, it's the same in the church. But my assumption is that people coming to Mass are coming from the same kind of environment, the same kind of society. They're exposed to the same stuff that I'm exposed to as I listen to the news, or maybe they're not. And so when I come, I'm trying to, okay, but who are we in the midst of all this? In other words, well, what am I? I'm rambling now. I think. But if it is too political, but I'm not talking about Trump. I'm not talking about the Democrats or the Republicans. I'm talking about who we are as Christians, as Catholics, in a society that is governed, and being governed in a way for several decades already that has been I'm going to say in my opinion, but it's just not my opinion, but in a with gross deviation from Judeo-Christian values and principles, the fact that, you know, we've so flippantly, and I say this because it was a very flippant redefinition of matrimony, marriage, the redefining of the family, the toying with the psychosexual development of our young people, the radical feminism, the I've said it probably here, but I've said it to the people. Listen, if I have to address the sexual or let's say the call to, you know, we're called to chastity, we're called to purity with great struggle today. I understand. I get it. I know what we're up against, but that's just it. We're up against. So say, you know, the criticism that we're fixated on sex, the church, everybody, you hear this all the time, the church is so fixated on sex. Well, that's, the fixation is not the church. The fixation is the society. Society has this fixation. And as a pastor of the church, as a priest of God, imperfect as I am, sinful as I am, I have a responsibility to speak about these things within the context of the gospel message and the society we live in. And so there is this an element of the politics that will get into this. Does that make any sense?
But Father, you know, and something else I'm thinking as you're talking, and this does bother me, because I'm telling you, I believe there's people in this world, people within their own church too, at the Mass. People want to hear what they want to hear. And to me, that's not what the sacrifice of the Mass is about, okay? If people tend to care about the way a priest looks, the way a priest talks, the way this, that, and the other thing, I'm sorry, you're not there for the right reasons. Just like the person, I'm sorry, I don't know this person that wrote this letter, but I know the mentality from what I've heard. If you bring people to a church for the first time and you're that offended by what a pastor says or how a pastor looks or that he did not or did say something you agree or disagree, then you're not there for the right reasons. I'm sorry. I go back to that first letter where the person says, I don't feel like I belong. And I'm going to tell you something. I've been in the church for many years now. There's many things, I'm going to be honest, you taught me from being in church every Sunday. And by all means, if one day you offended me and I decided I'm going to leave or my, you know, something like that, that's not what it's about. And I think you also said the word I've been thinking since you started this is humility. And I'll be honest, what does humility mean? There's times I don't even know, because I don't think I've seen it, but I know this much. Humility is being humble. Humility is maybe not knowing the answers, but willing to accept. If you come one day and hear something that you don't understand and you walk away, maybe you're not humble to accept it. And by that same token, I have done those exact things in life. I have got mad about this or the other thing, and then I did walk away, not realizing why I got mad. Maybe some truths for me hurt. And that's what I think wrong with society. We tend to then say, oh, we shouldn't tell you the truth. Let's sugarcoat it some way to make you come back. No, I don't want that. I've met many priests in my life. I've been thankful to have people in my lives. Father Coyce, Father Loya. You know that.
Mm-hmm.
I have also seen priests that I don't want to have anything to do with. But I have the sense, the charity, to not say, oh, I dislike you for whatever. I just, with charity, well, move on.
Yeah, I have,
and you take it too.
I know this. Because this is my job. This is, you know, the thing is, you want, like I said, first of all, I don't want to offend the Lord, and I don't want to be the cause of somebody going away from the faith, or that, you know, we can't sustain our parish because I've got my own idiosyncrasy or my own...
And it's funny, I can struggle with this because I'm the big mouth talking, but you're the actual person that is responsible. But I think, how do you do? You, sometimes you just have to let it go.
Sure, but at the same time, you know, in the gospel yesterday, Jesus says, you know, don't think I've come to bring peace upon the earth. No, I've come to bring not peace, but the sword of the Spirit that's going to bring division. So how do you... So I have to ask before, and I think it's just not me, but I think many priests, this is a challenge for us, you know, because how do we, especially in a time like this, and I made this, and he also mentioned, and I respect this, I appreciate, and I invited him, I said, you come and talk to me, and bring your friends, and let's sit down and talk, because I love to talk, and I do listen, and I am a charitable person, I am a kind person, I'm a merciful person. I was thinking, you know, that maybe it's, on one hand, you know, I don't know. I just want to say, Tony, you know, that I mentioned, because he mentioned, you know, that I was overly critical of the Pope and the Church and all that, and he's a devout Catholic. I mean, it seems to me he's an adorer and all that, and so I respect him and I respect the challenge. But I mentioned, for instance, yesterday, you know, how hard it is today. So I've spoken well of the Pope, but I've also been very open about sometimes he says something that creates confusion, and I said this is makes it hard for us.
I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
No, I don't think so either. Or yesterday I was just reading the cardinal from Austria was speaking to the people of Ireland, and I was shocked at what he was saying. You know, we don't have time to go in. We're just about done, but we'll be back Thursday and Friday. We'll be back. I'll be back, but. Because I do want to go into these five hard truths, because I think it's somehow related. But again, as we come to the end of the show, this is a time when we really need the prophetic voice, but we also need a prudent discernment and prudence in knowing how to. And this is where I think I can slip up, and I mean that. I mean you support me, others will support me, but there's others that I have to be. A little bit more sensitive, perhaps, in what I say, how I say it, and I don't know. I'm telling you, this is what it's in my mind today, and it's something that I've got to take to prayer. And I mean, I seriously mean take it to prayer and say, Lord, are you trying to? What are you telling me through this? Is this the price one pays for trying to live in truth and to convey the truth? Or am I getting in the way? Am I getting in the way? Am I the impediment? And I think we all have to ask ourselves that, too. It's just part of our humble discernment in the presence of God. So anyway, all right, everybody. Thanks for listening. Thank you. It's good to be back. I mean back today. So.
Yeah, it's good.
All right. Almighty God bless you, the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit.
Amen.
Ciao.
What's there to say when the world makes no sense? Do we search deeper truths or sit on the fence? Can you see? Can you see? Can you see the winds have changed? We marvel and flatter such meaningless thoughts. The shell appears strong, but the inside is rot. It's time to be stirred. The time is now.